Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the Best Hang Podcast featuring Max Kerman, Shane Cunningham, and I am Mike Bierman. Welcome to the Best Hang Podcast. I'm Mike. We got Max. We got Shane. And all three of us are in a different location. I'm currently working from home. Shane, looks
hardly
like you're
working
in the office. Maxie boy, it looks like you are in a jail cell. What's going on right now? Are you being held at a border somewhere?
You know, for a guy like me, this is kind of like the equivalent of jail in that I'm in a place with no cool coffee shops. With no interesting restaurants, very little cult, I'm gonna offend somebody, culture to speak of.
The whisper.
Reno, Nevada, in a casino.
You're coming to us from a casino.
I don't even care about gambling. So, you know, it's this place does nothing for me. But anyway, so basically, I'm in this business center. Ash will roll, and basically it's clearly never been used because like over here there's like that, this was where a computer was, there's just a computer keyboard behind me, there's some kind of office, there is a printer, there's Ash in the booth next to me, and yeah man, this is a nice quiet spot because it's a day off on tour. We are driving towards San Francisco, but the bus driver can only do 8 hours at a time. So yesterday we had a day off as well, and we were in Salt Lake City, also sucks. And then we're going to be in a real city tomorrow, San Francisco, where crime rates are sky high.
I was watching an Arkell's story, actually. And thought you. It looked like everyone was watching The Price is Right or something, but it panned over to you, Max. And you had your earbuds in and you were busily working on your computer.
Yeah.
What were you doing?
I got lots of ideas, man. I'm working on lots of stuff. You know me.
Like band stuff? You writing a script? What were you doing? I was so curious.
Things I can't talk about on air. But, you know, I'm always thinking stuff, you know. I can't say it to everybody right now because I don't want to jinx it. Maybe it will never come true if I say it out loud. But, yeah, also working on set lists for the Canadian tour, which you guys I hope can come to. Well, three shows, Guelph, Peterborough, St. Catharines. But before I ramble on about tour, how are you guys doing? What's going on?
Oh, good. Yeah. I'm on drugs right now. I'm on my first day of Ritalin. So this is a big day.
Really?
Yeah.
Tell us why.
Yeah.
So I'm legally drugged. I don't know. I found life. It was hard to keep up. Like I could manage in my 30s when I didn't have children and I just had to like worry about a 9-to-5 job. But adding children to the mix and then adding all these side projects and like this family tree and all this stuff, it was too hard to do. Too hard to cope and manage. And like all my little tricks and coping mechanisms weren't serving me to be productive.
So what does Ritalin do? I'm always confused about what drugs do. Is it an upper or a downer? Is it more like cocaine or heroin? That's the divide, right?
More like meth, but it doesn't react like meth if you have ADHD. If you have ADHD, it kind of gets you to just probably what I would think a person who's more neurotypical experiences, which this is like a healthy level of dopamine.
Or is your dopamine low or high?
Low. Really low. You have ADHD, like it's hard to I don't know, like get any motivation to do anything. Like you really have to play a little bit of mental chess to trick yourself into doing anything, unless you're very interested in it. That's why a lot of people with ADHD are kind of creatives, because that's all they get out of bed for. But definitely, like I would say, I tested it on the bus ride over here. Like I wonder if I can focus on reading more, and I would say I probably, if I really focus, I could maybe read 20 pages an hour. Now I think I could probably read 50 or 60 pages in an hour.
Whoa, just like that with one pill.
Yeah.
Are you sure you can get the pill from Limitless? Because that seems like a really big jump.
No, I think average people probably read 40 to 60 pages an hour. I think really like a kind of slower is 30. 20 is just abhorrently slow. I was going like very, very slow reading, and my retention rate, even at 20 pages an hour, would be terrible. But now, yeah, I've at least doubled it.
After one day of Ritalin.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm also susceptible to my mind playing tricks on me too. So sometimes the placebo effect is just as good as the real thing.
Can you overdose in Ritalin?
There's only one way to find out. No, I would think anything you could overdose on, even weed, you know, you can like green out and feel very surreal and uncomfortable, but I'm on a low dose.
And this is a doctor prescribed.
Yes, of course. That's why I'm talking about it. But every week they double it. So next week I will double it, and then I'll add a little bit more the week after that. And then I'll be doing four times what I'm doing the week after that.
What do you predict is going to happen to your life? How's it going to change? What are you hoping for?
To people who have done this just with a different ADHD drug, they said it could be mere coincidence, but they went to just kind of surviving to thriving and having like a business that was very, very successful. So that was a huge motivation for me, especially because I always considered this person very stable. And I'm like, geez, like I feel like he's the stable version of ADHD, and I'm very unstable, impulsive. So I want to be more grounded. So that's why I took the plunge. I saw a psychologist. Also, I just had a meeting with my family doctor, and her daughter has ADHD. So it was very, I don't know, a relief.
Have you told your kids yet? Have you sat them down and told them that daddy's going to be a different person?
I don't know if I'm going to be. I don't know. I would expect my one daughter definitely has traits that don't worry me, but I got an eye on her. 50% chance of your children having what you have.
Do you think she should just get on Ritalin like sooner rather than later? Like why go through the trouble of the next, you know, 35 years of her life without just get her on it?
You have to be six. That's the minimum. And okay. My daughter is five, so we'll see. She's
happy
going.
Birthday.
Oh, are you talking to Mike?
No, I said happy birthday, Lucy.
When you turn six, you're going to give her a box of pills. Yeah, that's the joke.
Okay. I'm on my phone, so my phone can only see the person who is talking. And since you were talking, Max, I thought maybe like Danica came by with like a piece of cake for Mike or something.
Oh, no.
Mike just had his birthday.
I did, yeah. Well, Danica's actually in the office. This is, I don't know if you guys noticed, but I'm in a much nicer office area because Danica's set up her office like with a nice window in the background when she's working from home. Because Danica's now back to work after a long mat leave with our second daughter, Roberta. But when she's not home, so Thursdays are really like, I'm working from home, Danica's at the office, both kids are in school. I immediately steal Danica's office because the fucking light is awesome, as you guys can see coming in right now. I feel bad because Shane's obviously stuck in a dark edit bay, and Max literally has a cage rolled down behind him in this weird section of the what is it, Nevada, Reno? The Reno
Casino? Yeah, we're
casino?
In the, what's this hotel called? The Nugget. We're in the Nugget Hotel.
Okay, all right. But yeah, so I mean, you know, my life is far more uneventful. Shane is obviously trying this new prescription, and it seems to be working so far in the first 24 hours, if we go by page count on a book. And, you know, Max, you're on the road. I want to hear about the road because I know you've had some issues, but I will say to our listeners, this is going to be a quicker pod because I have to go to an open house for Winona.
Are you buying another house for Winona?
Yeah, I'm buying a house for... No, Max, when you have kids, their schools have open house where you go talk to the teachers. They show you around their class, the art area, all the shit that they do. Winona is very excited for this moment, and I got to go do that, and you know, then I'm going to take him to a restaurant or whatever.
Okay, here's a question. Yeah, you're going to take her to a restaurant. You're going to take her to Eastside Myers or Jack Astor's? Yeah.
I let her choose. She chose Jack's. But yeah, I'm like, when it's just me, it's like they know they're going to restaurants. It's gotten to the point where Winona actually doesn't want to go to restaurants. She's like, can we just make mac and cheese? And I'm like, come on, let's go to a restaurant. She's like, no, let's. And I'm like, fuck. She's literally, this is no joke, since Danica the day, she has been to more restaurants at the age, she'll be turning 5 in a couple weeks. She's been to more restaurants at the age of 5 than I probably went to before I was 20 years old. No joke.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel that way too, because my parents, we didn't go out like maybe once every couple weeks if we were lucky. But I always think once a month, like not much though, but compared to what I do now, which is 3 times a day.
Yeah, totally.
I always think Red Lobster, Swiss Chalet once a year.
Once a year. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Mike.
Go ahead.
Are you feeling like, what is the feeling of having the house entirely to yourself all day? I can only imagine what you're getting up to today. Like, what are you doing?
Well, today's actually been a busy day. We had to deliver some scripts and stuff. So I was like, I was working, but on a typical, let's just say that if people want to go for beers on a Wednesday, people can't see Max is making jokes, visual jokes. If people want to go for beers on a Wednesday night, let's just say I don't think that's a bad idea because I'm going to have the house all to myself on a Thursday if it's going to be a bit slow. But yeah, if there was like a camera sort of in my like house showing what I did, it's kind of like Tom Cruise in Risky Business. It's like I'll work for 20 minutes and then I'll go on the drum kit for like a half hour, like boom, bop, boom, bop, boom. Then I'll go back and do a bit more work. Then I'll sort of like look at Raptors news. Then I'll like sort of like walk around the house like, maybe I'll do the dishes. It's a nice pace. I feel very sort of like unsped up at all, you know, but you still got to, you know, I do set out a to-do list and I got to make sure I do certain things by certain times of the day. Cause if I do not, it ends up getting pushed to the next day, you know? So I am very sort of like task oriented when I have a loose day like this. Like I remember Shaney went to a high school called Westmount, and the famous thing about Westmount here in Hamilton is that it was like learn at your own pace. You weren't like, they had an untraditional sort of structure for learning. I went to McNabb where it was just like a typical high school. You had to hand in your assignments. But the rumor, and Shane can speak to whether this was true or not, was like, oh, it's like very loose and we don't really adhere to the conventions of sort of traditional learning. Like it's like you learn at your own pace. You sort of do the work if you want to do it. And I always thought like, oh, I'd be like good with that. But I don't know. Like I wouldn't have been mature enough in high school to do that. I needed to become an adult and set like sort of fucking barrier or limitations for myself or whatever you want to call it, construct within which I need to work. Shane, how did you find that working arrangement when you went to high school at Westmount?
They switched up the structure of the school because of me. What I used to do is, so just to explain. At Westmount, you would have a semester to submit 20 units, they called them, of work. And each subject, you'd have 20 units. So math, let's say, 20 units of math, you get a full semester. You could do as much or as little math as you wanted in that semester. And let's say you only did 15 units of math in that semester. You didn't fail the course, you just carried over. So you could actually go into the next semester and play catch up. So what I would do is the last week before the semester was up, since I didn't want to carry over, I would submit 18 units of work in the last week. And that would be like really a huge piss off to a lot of teachers. But I would do this in every subject, English, math. I would just cram because I didn't know at the time I had this ADHD personality where I leave insurmountable amount of work to the last minute. And I would do that insurmountable amount of work. Like I could actually be sleepless for days and just, you know, have the gumption to do it. So they changed the rule after I did that the first time that now at Westmount, you could only submit 2 units per week in the last 3 weeks of a semester.
Oh, wow. Because you backloaded it. You broke the system.
Yes, I did. And I also, after that, they changed the rule. I got very far behind. I started carrying over every subject. And then by the time I was in grade 11, I was essentially still in grade 9. They kicked me out of the school. So I didn't thrive in that program, to say the very least.
And you did end up at McNabb, at the high school that a bunch of us went to.
Yeah. But then I had all the bad habits that I had at Westmount, and then I carried over those bad habits, no pun intended, to McNabb, and just failed every single subject, like with 10s and 20s. Like, those were my marks. My transcript was 10, 20, 18.
Man. Do you think if you had read Ritalin back then, you would have been a star student?
I took Ritalin one day when I was like 19, and I just fucking killed that day. And I remember it was like my first day where the voices kind of all stopped in my head talking at once. And it was just like a little chatter where I could focus. And that's why I was telling my, when I was getting my prescription, she mentioned Adderall as a possibility. I was like, no, give me Ritalin. And then we went with Ritalin.
Yeah, wow. There was a stretch. I don't know if the kids still do this, but like where people would do Ritalin like recreationally to get high, essentially, you know, you'd have whatever. Maybe I know some people that did it. Maybe yours truly dabbled. But what would happen is, to Shane's point, it's like all these people would get real jacked. You know, you get kind of like, you know, whatever, energy, buzzy, right? But then I think the kids that needed it, it would actually just calm them or center them. It would have the exact opposite effect. And then that's maybe how you knew, oh, maybe this is something I actually need in my day to day, if it's not getting you sort of high in the way that it's getting everybody else.
Shane, do you think Mike or I could be on Ritalin or should be on Ritalin?
No, I noticed working with Mike that he definitely has way more focus, like way, way more focus. Like, I've worked very closely. I thought maybe he'd be similar to me, but working with him and observing him, he doesn't. If anyone did, though, it would be you, Max. I could see you having it. Lesser case than me. You're more responsible with your brain than me. But yeah, I think you have a that other guy we were talking to, maybe you have a similar level of as him.
Yeah, I do think about in the morning when I'm calm, just as I'm drinking my coffee, that's the only time I can really read a book. And I love that part. I go to bed so excited for my first coffee in the morning because it's so peaceful. My mind isn't going, like, my mind's going nice and slow, and I don't want to do anything. But as soon as I get that first coffee buzz, then I like throw the book out the window and I'm like, let's go. And then I can't really stop until I like wipe out for a nap at like 5 p.m. I go hard and then I fall asleep for 20 minutes and then I'm kind of rolling again.
Yeah.
So, Mike, tell us about your birthday. Tell us about your big birthday.
Oh, unremarkable. It came and went. Actually, it was really nice. Like, listen, the truth is, as you get older, like, I've never really celebrated. We've talked about this on the pod a million times over the years, but like, I'm not really like a birthday guy. Like, one year I got so drunk and I forgot it was actually my birthday weekend, and I woke up to an email from the NBA.com, and they were like, happy birthday, Michael. And I was like, oh, fuck, it's my birthday. I forgot.
Those were the lost single years between Danica, right?
Oh, the days all sort of bled together. I'd be lying, though, if I didn't say it was a fun time. But what's nice about now is it's like, I don't know this might sound cheesy, but it's just nice to have people who like love you and care about you. So like in the morning, like, well, my birthday, when I woke up, it was on, what was my birthday? Monday morning. Like, I came downstairs and it's like, there's Danica and the kids, and they got all these balloons up and these nice, there was funny though, cause there was like Raptors balloons. It was like, it was either like my birthday party or a 12-year-old Raptors super fan party. And it was like, they got me this cool, this Scotty Barnes sort of like nice, like it's like kind of like a toy type thing. What are those things called? They're not bobbleheads, but they're like, I don't know. They make them for all sorts of stuff. Here, I'll show it to you. Hold on one second.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites.
So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. So start getting your best night's sleep in sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. And you can try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee, plus 15% off your first order with code BUTTERY. So head to bollandbranch.com today. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Shane, should we make conversation so Nathan doesn't have to edit around this?
Not really, no. In the past, I would have had to because I wouldn't be able to focus. But now I'm just so chill, man. I'm comfortable with the silence.
Wow.
Like, what the hell is Mike going to show us right now? Like an action figure? This better be good.
I think it is an action figure.
Let's see. So
it's like this cool, like, it's basically a replica of his like Slam magazine cover.
Well, okay.
These things. But anyway, so it's like this cool thing that will go on like my office desk or like a shelf in the background or whatever. But anyway, it's like, so stuff like that, really cool, like gift cards, stuff like that. But anyway, it's the idea that you come downstairs and you're just like, you get that warm feeling in your heart. And so that's what it's like. But I didn't do anything. I don't know, Max, when you're back from tour, what are we doing?
Let's party when I'm back from tour. I'm so excited to celebrate your birthday. We got to do it. Maybe we'll go to a Raptors game. Maybe you say, Max, it's my birthday, take me to a Raptors game. Maybe we do that.
The home opener is on the 25th against Minnesota.
Oh, I'm back around then. Ho, ho, ho. I don't hate this idea.
Courtside seats for a birthday.
Okay, guys.
Mike, because Ash goes, shit, it's today Mike's birthday, and at this point in the day, it was like 6 o'clock or something like that. It was like later in the day. I was like, fuck, I don't know. So I just googled John Lennon's birthday, and then I was like, it is his birthday today. So that's how you I got it. It was your birthday.
Ash hit me with the text before you, though. I got to say, Maxi boy. So here's the deal. I know you guys were just in silence as I went and got that toy, but my batteries are about to die, so I got to go downstairs and get batteries. So you guys are gonna have to talk amongst yourselves again. But I'll be back in like 2 seconds. But this is now going to become the Shane and Max pod for the next, couple of minutes before I get back and proceed.
Hey, Shane, what's the most amount of money you've ever lost at a casino?
I think, like a devastating amount for my age. So I think I was 19 and I lost maybe 1500, which.
You lost 1500 bucks?
But it was.
That's a lot for now.
So it was like I had won all this money playing roulette, and then I lost it. And then on the way home, I was in tears on the way home.
Really? Which casino was it?
It was Niagara, because I found when I went to Brantford Casino, it's a charity casino close to Hamilton. They had they had a maximum amount you could bet. And I was in Niagara. They had no maximum. They had a minimum, but the maximum was so high. So I was like, I just keep winning and doubling and doubling and doubling. I need those high maxims. But then it went red like 17 times in a row. And I was betting black. And it seemed like almost impossible that would happen. Like I thought the table was rigged, the roulette table. But it turns out this happens all the time. It'll go 17 red in a row. It'll go 14 black in a row. And it will always equal a 50% chance over time.
Shane, I think that you would see yourself as somebody who could get really good at gambling, like poker or cards. Have you ever, cause like, I remember watching the movie Rounders when I was a kid, and I was like, I'm going to become a genius at poker. And I remember going through a poker phase, probably for about 4 months with my friend Daniel. But now I realize, but then I kind of like grew disinterested in it. And I don't even really understand how poker even works now. I kind of don't care about it. I know that I'd be the worst gambler, so I just don't even bother. What do you think you'd be good at?
It was almost like in basketball when you're young, you think I'm going to make the NBA. And then you go to a park one day with a kid like your age and he's fucking dunking and shit. And you're just like, oh, never mind. Like I'm not close. So once I had that gambling moment, I just thought, oh, I'm just shit at gambling. I'm never going to be good. Nothing feels as bad as losing this amount of money. And I'm just never going to gamble again. And I haven't.
Did you ever promise yourself as a kid that you'd like make the major leagues? Because I definitely did. And sometimes I still think about that promise I made to myself that I'd make the big leagues.
I said NBA. I thought for sure I'd make the NBA. I would practice for hours upon hours. Then, and no one could beat me at one-on-one. Like, no one. We had kids who were unbelievable. But I realized one-on-one is very different than five-on-five. But, yeah, and baseball I always thought sucked. Like, minus the 92-93 season with the Blue Jays, which was unbelievable to watch. Playing and watching baseball, I thought sucked.
Well, I'm still going to keep my promise. You're going to see me in the big leagues one day.
You think so? Wow.
No. You know what? I thought I could be an amazing NFL quarterback, even though I never even played high school football. I was like, just like, as long as I don't get hit, I'll be fine. And then we played this touch football league earlier this year, and I was the quarterback, and we went 1-6. We won one game.
impressive.
How accurate was your throwing? I'm back, by the way. Hello, everybody. Sorry to be gone. How accurate was your throwing? Was it as good as you thought?
It was fine. It's just way harder. And even though it was flag football, I was still getting injured all the time. And me getting injured, I'm such a weak person. So I was like, man, imagine getting hit one time in a football game. I won't be able to deal with it.
I also, when I was a kid, I thought that I was going to be a professional singer at one point. I thought.
Really?
I would sing every night just out loud. And sometimes my mom would be like, what's going on in there? I'd be like, oh, nothing. But I don't know. For some reason, my voice sounds good to me even to this day in my head, but in a recording, it doesn't sound good. Like if somebody's filming me with their iPhone or something.
I'm kind of like that too. I think I have a great voice.
I was going to say, Max, do you like your voice when you hear it back?
Not as much as I like it when I'm singing. When I'm singing it in the moment, I think it's amazing. And then I hear it back. I'm like, yeah, it's fine. I don't think it's that great.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. John Lennon had that. He didn't like hearing his voice. He made them put so much delay on it because he was very insecure about his voice.
John Lennon's my favorite singer of all time, I think.
Oh, I love his voice. I love his voice. Yeah. But he was insecure about it. No, I think McCartney's technically a better singer. Like he's got more range and he can scream. He can be smooth. He can do rock. He can do like jazz. Like McCartney is just a freak. He's a freak. He can do everything. He's a musical genius.
So guys, I've been on the road for the last 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And we didn't think we'd be here because our tour bus never showed up. And we basically had to like rent minivans and moving trucks and stuff to kind of get us around. And by the time we got to Detroit, it looked like the tour bus just wasn't going to show up at all. And we were about to literally like cancel all the shows after Chicago. So we had this big band meeting at like 3 o'clock the day of the Detroit show. We're like, all right guys, like if the bus doesn't show up after Chicago, which is the next show, like we can't get to Denver. We can't keep going at this pace where it's like the crew is driving around a moving van and we're like in minivans or we're flying to the next city. It just like becomes, you just can't do it. And then, so it was very strange. I don't know if you've ever been in the situation where it's like, okay, you come to the realization that like your next 2 weeks isn't going to be what you thought it was. And then you start making plans. You're like, okay, I guess I'll be home on Monday. It was like, I forget what day it was, but it was, I think it was Thursday or Friday. Because we had Columbus, Chicago. So it was like Detroit, Columbus, Chicago. That would be it. I was like, I guess I'll be home on Monday. And by the way, Eric, our tour manager, had been calling around moving tour bus companies for the previous like 12 days, just like trying to find one that was serviceable because the one that we had reserved was still in the shop. And then an hour and a half later, he's like, guys, you're not going to believe it, but I found us a bus. So everybody had to like kind of call their significant others. Like, okay, you remember I told you I was going to be home on Monday now? I'll see you in 2.5 weeks. And we are in Reno, as I mentioned. We're going to San Francisco tomorrow. But the funny thing that's kind of happened is because the band is traveling in like close quarters together, it feels kind of like the good old days, you know, when you're like in a van together. And it was so much fun. We've had such a great time. Like the band's like never kind of hung out more than we ever have like recently. Cause we're like in the van. We're like, let's go like top five American cities. All right. Top five cities in the world. Okay. If you had to, you know, live in Europe or Asia, what would you do? You know what I mean? Like we were just like playing those van games and it was kind of sweet. It was like a really good time.
You guys are talking again
right now on the bus.
Mike's been really funny. Tony's been in a really good mood. Tim, everyone's been great. I don't know. Everybody's been like really funny. Tony, who, and he'll say this himself, who can be kind of like a surly, grumpy Italian sometimes. He has been so, he just wakes up in the morning. He's chatting everyone's face off. He's like so excited to be in Reno because he's like, you know, going to gamble. The guys also, some of them like smoking cigars. So they've found a couple cigar hangout places along the way.
That's hilarious. You know, you guys are like, this is like, it's kind of like one of those like movies where it's like there's a couple that's been in a long-term marriage and they're on the brink of divorce. Not that the Arkells are on the brink of breaking up. And then it's like there's a bunch of things that are beyond their control, these forces that come together. And they it's like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles. But like for a couple that was like, they were on their way to get a divorce, but they can't get to their destination. So they're forced to spend time together. And then they realize they still love each other.
It's kind of like that.
They're talking again. We've
always got along great, but it's definitely been different. And the crew's had such a good attitude. Like there's been no complainers. Everyone's just like, huh, whatever you want. Like I feel bad for Eric, who's had to, shoulder a lot of the stress, and Ash obviously, but everyone's just a fucking gamer. It's great. And then like, I've seen two movies so far. I saw Dumb Money. Do you know that movie?
Yeah. The one about the GameStop stuff.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Yeah.
Is it Pete Davidson's in that?
Yeah, Pete Davidson, Seth Rogen. It's a pretty stacked cast.
So, how is it?
I liked it. It's a movie that's like right up my alley in every way. Like the cast is really good. Tonally, it's like something I enjoy. Like the theme is about a real story about these like Reddit investor normies that end up like putting a bunch of money into GameStop. This is back in the pandemic. And they, as a result, end up screwing over Wall Street. It's kind of like a victory for the little guy kind of story. I think during the movie, does this ever happen to you? During the movie, you're like, this movie isn't that great. And then by the end, you're like, oh, this movie's actually pretty good. And then you think back on it 5 days later and you're like, pretty good movie. I like this movie a lot.
Shane, what you're saying about did you say this in the last pod? Maybe, I know, because I just went through the last pod. I don't think you said it, but you were talking about how a movie ends. You were saying the equation of how, maybe this isn't a conversation we were having privately, but you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, how the ending is so important. And you can often, like, I don't want to say fool the dummies, because Max just said by the end of it, he felt good. The magic trick to an ending of anything where the journey is almost irrelevant if you have a really strong ending.
Yeah, I think you were like, if the beginning's great, you had an equation that was a good phrase.
Some equation. I did mention it on a podcast where a great movie needs three awesome scenes and a great ending or something. Mm. That equation usually equals like a Forrest Gump or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's actually kind of true of a concert sometimes, I think. Because it's like you can go to a concert and be bored 60% of it, but if they play three songs and they end on a bang, you're like, love it. Oh, I think a lot of people think about that in a concert. And sometimes if I think something's not going as well as I want it to, I always got to remind myself, just get to the end, you'll end on a bang and people will leave happy. But the other movie I saw, the Haunting of Venice.
I watched that. The Clouseau movies. They're the Kenneth Branagh, like, Inspector Agatha Christie stuff.
You watched
I went one night. I was like, I was literally sitting with Dan, and I was like, sometimes I'll go just see, like, I went and saw The Creator. Like, sometimes, because I live close to a theater, if it's like 9 at night, the kids are down, and Dan's like, I got work to do, I'm going to bed. And I'm like, I don't really just want to go to the basement, and there's no hoops on yet. So I'm like, what the fuck? I'm like, so I just drive over to Silver City. Grab a Diet Coke and watch a movie. So A Haunting in Venice was one of the ones that I watched, but I like those movies.
I typically like these movies. Book Club Maddie makes fun of me. Like I like Death on the Nile.
They're fine for what they
but
are.
But this one did, we left halfway
Whoa,
through.
Whoa, too scared? Yeah.
No, I just thought it was kind of goofy. Did you like it?
I liked it. Again, not to do this. I did this I had it figured out in the first 40 minutes, but I enjoyed the journey for sure because I wanted to see how it unfold and see if I was right and all that stuff. But I liked those.
I couldn't even keep track of what was going on. I think my ADD was kicking in too hard. I was thinking about so many other things.
Or a couple pills.
So that could have been all the difference.
The editing?
Ending.
No, the ending.
Oh, yeah, the ending was strong. It was good. I mean, it resolved everything, and it kind of ended up with like a, because the whole premise of the movie is essentially Clouseau is the greatest detective, but he's retired. The Tina Fey character is his American friend who's like a journalist. She comes in. She's like, there's this medium who is like, I can't debunk her. Like, is she actually speaking with the dead? I need you, Clouseau, to debunk how she does her shit. And then so essentially it goes from there. And you kind of like with a movie like that, I don't know if it's a spoiler alert, it lives in the real world with logic, and Clouseau is going to figure out how it's done. But then there's always that slight element of like, is there a bit of connection with the, and I think they do a good job in the end of sort of leaving it in a way that's like, it's just the movie's made well. I actually watched a movie on Netflix This was a Sean Dawson recommendation. So I don't know if you guys have been flipping through the old Netflix lately, but there's a movie called Reptile on there with Justin Timberlake and Benicio del Toro and Alicia Silverstone. Wow. And Alicia Silverstone and Benicio del Toro reunited from, I can't remember the movie they were in years ago.
Baggage?
Yes, yes. Good. Nice pull. Anyway, it's like a cop drama. It's like a murder mystery. It's kind of like a little bit like Gone Girl style, Fincher, a little bit, whatever. But I flipped by and I was like, I don't want to watch this. The trailer kind of looked compelling. And then I went on Rotten Tomatoes, which a lot of people do, and it was like shit rating. And I was like, I'm not wasting the time. Then Doss puts in this little chat we got. He's like, great, tight little crime thriller. And I'm like, really? I'm like, all right, I'll give it the old chicken wing test. I'll watch the first 20 minutes. Tight crime drama. Not bad. It's like a, you know, a cop murder mystery unfold. Timberlake's actually a decent actor in it.
Why is it called a chicken wing test?
Well, because it's like, if by the time I finish my chicken wings and wash my hands, if I'm not into it, I'll flip on to something else.
And you can't channel if you're eating chicken wings.
We've made this up. This came from the podcast, the chicken wing test. We've just invented this. It's not like a phrase that's ever happened before, but that's wholly a Best Hang invention, the chicken wing test. You got 20 minutes where I can't change the clicker because they got the sauce on them. But if when I'm done my chicken wings and I've wiped my hands, if you haven't got me, I'm moving on.
I like that. Yeah. Here's a question for you guys. The other issue with the movie last night, The Haunting in Venice.
Yes, yes.
Is that Ash and I were the only people in the movie theater. And then I was like, okay, this is an issue because you go to the movie theater so you can't look at your phone. That's really why you're paying $15. You're not allowed to look at your phone.
Good point.
So then I look at her, I'm like, we're like not supervised right now. We could talk. We could fucking look at our phones. We could be distracted. And I think I succumbed to that a little bit where I was just like, I kind of don't give a shit. Like if you're around other people, you feel maybe guilty about leaving in the middle of a thing. You don't want this random stranger to look at you and go, you're leaving in the middle of this movie. But because no one was there, I was like, fuck it. Who gives a shit?
Yeah. They say for ADHD people, it's very important if you're trying to get work done to have kind of a witness around. So you're more liable to get something done if you have somebody watching you.
I think that's why I like working in coffee shops. You know what I mean? Yeah. I think it's very easy to fuck around if you're by yourself. Interesting. Yeah.
And you can't just click over to Pornhub as you tend to do.
No comment.
You still do it?
In the coffee shop. But what else is going on? I just finished the Michael Lewis book on Sam Bankman-Fried.
Controversial, apparently.
Controversial, I know.
I texted you because he's out doing the press tour, your boy, Michael Lewis, former pod guest. And you can maybe speak to this, but it seems like he's defending or having empathy for this. What is it, Sam Bankman?
Sam Bankman-Fried, yeah.
Yeah. And Bob Vulgaris, Haralabob, is a very famous sort of Twitter personality. He's not having it. He's kind of going at your guy, Michael Lewis. And I texted you, I said, Bob is really going in on Michael Lewis. What's up? And you said, I know, but you didn't elaborate.
It's interesting. I've been obviously talking to Book Club Maddie about this. And
guys, wait, can you give some context? Because if anyone's like me, they're probably wondering what the hell you're talking about.
So there was a big crypto scandal that happened last year. Basically, this guy, Sam Bankman-Fried, started this crypto exchange called FTX. And he was quickly, within like 2 years, like worth $30 billion because he owned the entire company. And then within about 3 days, the company was worth $0. And people were like, where did the money go?
It was like a Ponzi scheme.
Yeah. It basically,
it's a lot like that movie you went to go see, isn't it? With the GameStop, like a extreme value and then taken away, right?
Yes. But I think the circumstances are a little bit different where it was basically like, the issue with Sam Bankman-Fried is that he was gambling other people's money and then the money would sort of like disappear. And he was also really unorganized about it. But he probably has Asperger's is sort of what's implied in the book. And he doesn't have any really close relationships with anybody. Michael Lewis went to interview him. This is before everything fell apart. So this is like the fact that Lewis was with him as his world was crumbling was just kind of like good fortune for a writer to be there while this is all happening. And he asked Sam, he's like, do you have any like childhood friends I could talk to about what you're like as a kid? He's like, no. And then he's like, what about your brother? And he talked to his brother. He's like, yeah, Sam was more like my roommate. I didn't really think of him as a kid. Like wow. He thought childhood was kind of stupid. And then he also didn't like adults either because he thought anyone over the age of 30 was stupid or 35. Basically like adults just had dumb rules. And his whole thing was like calculating risk and assessing like you know, what are the chances of something good happening versus something bad? Everything was a probability, basically. And I heard somebody else say that in a podcast, if you could flip a coin where it was a 51% chance that the world would be double as good as it is today for everybody living, because he was an effective altruist, because he wanted to like get the maximum pleasure for as many people as possible, or a 49% chance that the world would blow up, would you flip the coin? And Sam Bankman-Fried goes, every time.
Wow.
Because like, but what if the world blows up? He's like, yeah, but what if it's twice as good? So he kind of thought in these ways. And he's definitely really smart, but also really cocky and really unorganized. There's these amazing scenes where he's on the phone with Anna Wintour because she wanted FTX to sponsor the Met. And he doesn't even know what the Met is or who Anna Wintour is. And he's playing a video game the entire time he's talking to her. He'd go on national TV regularly and be playing video games off screen. He only had one change of clothes, basically. He changed his socks a lot. But otherwise, he was just wearing cargo shorts and wrinkly shirts and his hair looked crazy. So I was arguing with Book Club Maddie. I was like, Matt, like, you know, he just seems unorganized. He doesn't seem as like vicious or as what's the word I'm looking for when somebody is like scheming to.
Yeah, like he didn't have ill malicious. Intent. He wasn't nefarious or malicious. Yeah, gotcha.
Yeah. And then Matt had a good point. Let me see if I can pull up the text. Yeah, he was like, what made him any different than anybody else who's a rich guy? He had a $30 million penthouse. He regularly flew private jets. He tried to influence politics as much as possible. He hung celebs who were only interested in with his money. He sounds like every other billionaire. I guess he hadn't bought a yacht yet. He was also under 30. And he did. And I was like, okay, that's a fair point. But I guess where Lewis is being criticized is that like, to other reporters, and especially based on the testimony of his former colleagues at FTX, everyone was like, no, this guy like knew he was acting irresponsibly and didn't care and didn't really care where the money went. Whereas Michael Lewis goes, nah, he was just like kind of unorganized. And there was a world where he actually could have made a huge difference in the lives of other people. And he was going to give away his money because that was the original reason why he wanted to make as much money as possible, is to give it away and make the world a better place. But yeah, really good book. And as you know, I'm on team Michael Lewis. And actually, I have a very memorable story buying his book. I was in Brooklyn.
Max, before you tell the story, which I think is great, I'm now tasking, it is going back to the Shane and Max pod. And one of you is going to have to do the sign off because I got to go to an open house. But tell your story. Love you guys.
Love you. I
can't wait to see who does the sign off. Which one of you is going to take it? Surprise me. Bye, y'all.
Bye.
Yeah.
All right, Shane, I'm going to wrap this story up. Basically, I was in this bookstore in Brooklyn. It's so weird with me and you right now, just looking at each other. And I was buying this other book. And then the rumply guy behind the counter was like, hey, we got the new Michael Lewis book in. And I didn't mention anything about knowing Michael Lewis or being a Michael Lewis fan. I'm like, you do? He's like, yeah, just came in. It's right there. He points at it. It's like on the shelf behind him. I'm like, can I buy it? He's like, no, man. Doesn't come out for another few days. I'm like, come on. He goes, that'd be illegal. You can't do that. I'm like, but I kind of know Michael Lewis. I'm sure he wouldn't mind. He's like, nope, it's illegal. I'm like, come on. And he's like, okay. He just sold me the book.
Why would he mention Michael Lewis?
I don't know.
You didn't ask him if he knew.
No, I didn't say anything about Michael Lewis. Maybe I just look like a Michael Lewis bro, but anyway, that's what fucking happened. And I got to read his book and I emailed Michael Lewis about it. And he emailed me back in 9 minutes and he just responded, I love this. The New York Times tried to send people out to find the book ahead of time and no one had any luck.
Wow.
Except for me. So that's kind of cool.
Story. Well, hey guys, you know, we do a lot of podcasts, but this was a really good one. Maybe.
That's not how it goes. It's like, I think it's like, hey guys, that's it. That's all. That was a great hang, maybe the best.
All right, okay, you win. My Ritalin is seriously wearing off though. I need more. Okay.
Hold up.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Confidence starts with loving who you are. And when your skin feels nourished and glows on the outside, you naturally radiate confidence from the inside. Give your skin a glow up with Osea's clinically proven Mega Moisture Duo. This ultra-hydrating body care features two of Osea's best sellers, Undaria Algae Body Oil and Undaria Collagen Body Lotion. These seaweed-powered heroes use skincare-level ingredients normally reserved for your face for results you can see and confidence you can feel. Osea has been making clean, clinically proven seaweed-infused face and body care products for over 28 years. This luxurious skincare is vegan, cruelty-free, and climate-neutral certified, so you never have to choose between your values and your best skin. Glow from the inside out. Get 10% off your first order with code GLOW at OseaMalibu.com. That's OseaMalibu.com, code GLOW.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.